This is the Dairy Download, brought to you by Blimling & Associates and the International Dairy Foods Association, where we offer extra sharp market and policy insights on dairy. I'm your host, Phil Plord.
And I'm your co-host, Kathleen Wolfley.
Today's episode is all about who's got milk. We talk about fluid milk at the retail level and the recent revival of an iconic ad campaign. But we'll also talk about milk consumption in a couple other critical channels, schools and food banks.
Our sponsor for today's show is the good folks at Standpack. For 70 years, Standpack has been manufacturing milk and ice cream packaging for companies located throughout North America. Contact Standpack and experience their legendary service.
Thanks, Standpack, and thanks, Kathleen. So, where are we now in our goofy dairy markets?
Well, we are heading into October with the block cheddar price at $2.57 per pound. That's up 3 cents on the week. Barrels finished at $1.81, which is up 17 cents. The butter market fell a penny to $1.51 per pound, and the non-fat dry milk market jumped to $1.14. That's up 6 cents on the week. And that leads me to the most important thing right now. The non-fat dry milk market is up to the highest level since March 3rd, which is pretty impressive given all the volatility in the markets so far this year. Anecdotal reports seem to suggest that Mexico is back in the market, something that they've been a little more inconsistent on here over the course of this year. So that may be stirring up the pot on the demand side a little bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Kathleen. You know, you don't have too many conversations about the powder market without a question thrown about where's Mexico, what's the appetite down there, and how consistent is it going to be? I think the most important thing right now is the trailing monthly cheese price average. Now that it's October, we're seeing another significant jump in the trailing average. So we had a situation where the average price for cheese in the month of July was $2.65. It went down to $1.77 in August and now back up to $2.33 for the month of September. A good number of customers out there order on last month's average. So they ordered very heavy in the month of September to take advantage of the $1.77 August price. And now I think it's fair to wonder whether all of a sudden in October their appetites diminish because of a 30% increase in that price. So I think that's a big deal in terms of what we're going to see in the weeks ahead in the cheese market and whether or not we can sustain this high pricing.
Well, Phil, that's a lot of numbers that you've been tossing around there. My stat of the week is that Disney is laying off 28,000 employees from its theme parks, which really makes me think about the unemployment rate and the overall health of the economy and what it looks like going forward into 2021. And more specifically, how is USDA going to react with all this potential new need for food aid going forward?
Yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. And oddly enough, in today's episode, we speak with the CEO of the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank, Michael Flood, who's going to talk a lot about the demand on food banks these days. I would say that my stat of the week comes from a little bit different direction. The pandemic has yielded lots of fascinating changes in behavior. And with that, interesting data points. My data point stat of the week is that RV sales in the United States were up 22% from the months of June, July, and August on a year-over-year basis. That's 20,000 more big rigs hitting the road. People are traveling. They want to get out, but they're not flying. Those numbers are still pretty terrible. And they're not staying in hotels. That occupancy is running at about 50%. They're buying RVs and jumping them and heading to the parks. I'm not sure, Kathleen, how much cheese is in those rolling refrigerators, but certainly they are out there. What's your fearless prediction this week?
Well, Phil, I read a stat earlier this week that suggested that 68% of people surveyed think that their holiday plans are going to change in one way or another. That brings me to my fearless prediction of cheese demand is going to underperform versus expectations in the fourth quarter. What about you?
You know, I'm going to look at butter, and my fearless prediction is that for the first time in a long time, we will not see the price of butter at the CME exceed $1.75 per pound between now and the end of the year.
Hey, Phil, let's go to our first guest.
Today, we're talking all about milk and how it moves through retail and institutional channels. I cannot think of a better guest than Yin Woon Rani to talk about milk retail. Yin is the CEO of the Milk Processor Education Program, or MilkPEP, a dairy checkoff program responsible for growing consumption. Yin is fairly new to MilkPEP and the dairy industry, but she brings nearly 25 years of CPG marketing experience to the table. Yin, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
The Got Milk commercials are back. And if you've seen them, you've seen Katie Ledecky, Olympic medals, 5 gold medals in the Olympics, swimming in a pool, snorkel, and a glass of milk on her head, swimming down the lane. So whose idea was Katie Ledecky with a glass of milk on her head? It's kind of amazing, isn't it?
I mean, it's truly remarkable. I mean, she truly deserves the appellation of greatest of all time. And I just loved how her own tweet about it said, "This might be one of the greatest swims of my own career," which is pretty high praise coming from a 5-time medalist. We've had an ongoing relationship with Katie. She has had a long lifetime relationship with chocolate milk. It's part of her recovery session since she was like 13 years old. So when we're bringing back Got Milk, we approached a number of our influencers to do something that sort of demonstrated how amazing milk is. But it was her and her team that came up with that particular trick. And by all accounts, she did it in one take, which is really pretty amazing.
That is pretty remarkable. I've been watching the NBA playoffs, and I see it 2 or 3 times a night, and I shake my head and say, that's pretty cool. So I imagine that the campaign is getting good feedback.
Yeah, we've been very pleased so far. We launched with Katie a few weeks ago and got tremendous media coverage, but probably even more importantly, fantastic consumer engagement. 3 billion views on TikTok, lots of great positive comments on Instagram and Facebook. And as we've said before, it is all about celebrating America's love for milk and turning the camera back on them and showing how important milk is in American lives. So it's been a very, very healthy and so far. And just this last Sunday, we actually had Tony Hawk come out and do his own act inspired by Katie Ledecky. So he does a McTwist, holding a glass of milk and doesn't spill a single drop. Also purportedly one take. And so we bringing more and more wonderful athletes and influencers of different kinds out through the rest of the year.
In the long run, how does Milk Pep define success around this program?
It's a great question. I mean, we are a dairy checkout program, so our job is very simple, is to encourage the consumption of fluid milk. And so in the end, the ultimate success is in driving volume and sales for the milk companies that fund us. To get there, obviously, you need to travel the funnel or the consumer journey. And we believe that we need to reclaim milk's place in culture first and foremost in order to drive consumption. But success for us is making sure that milk is drunk by as many households as possible, as frequently as possible.
And it's kind of cool to see, is there anything about evolving demographics? Are there any interesting trends in there that you see? I think that, the commercials clearly skew hip and cool.
One of the hallmarks of this industry, as you both know, is that milk is one of the most high penetration categories I've ever operated in, literally in 94% of households. So almost every household has milk in it. And there's lots of different audience segments within it. We have decided more and more to focus on families with kids and, all kinds of kids from super young to teenagers, because we really believe in the lifetime value of those consumers. But we're fighting for the future of milk. So we're going to increasingly focus on the family audience for now. This is a miracle product. If we were to launch it today and cook it up in a lab somewhere and bring it out with its nutrition profile, its taste acceptance, and its value price point, it would be a miracle product. And so I think sometimes the dairy industry and maybe consumers themselves take it for granted, but it's truly an amazing product.
So I guess stepping away a little bit from the Got Milk campaign, what are some of the biggest questions that you're wrestling with today?
I mean, this has been such a complicated year, Kathleen. I mean, I think every industry has been affected, every sector, every company, every individual. And I think in general, we're trying to rewire ourselves to just be more agile and being able to respond and react to the many changes that the world throws at us, between COVID and social justice issues and the upcoming election. It's definitely been an action-packed year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very safe to say at this point, Yin, that 2020 has been a unique and remarkable year. We did see during the sort of stock up phase, lockdown phase of the pandemic, we saw fluid milk sales accelerate at an incredible rate. We went from slightly negative or flat year over year to up 40%, 50%. I think there was one week that might have been up 70% year over year in terms of sales. And so the question I think is there a way to kind of capitalize on that momentum?
No, again, another great question and one that we've spent a lot of time and research getting consumer insight and marketplace insight around. Obviously, the panic buying mode has softened. But we are still seeing healthiness in many milk segments and across many customers. It's uneven customer by customer, in all honesty, but we spent a lot of time trying to dissect what brought people back to milk. And as many of the great foundational things that milk stands for have just become more relevant in this situation, you know, comfort, versatility, nutrition, trustable. And you know, we think it's our job and our obligation to really work hard to sustain that demand, remind people of the reasons they drink milk, from the emotional to the functional, and to use our marketing budget and our marketing awareness to keep that demand as healthy as possible.
Yeah, one of the things that we've talked a lot about over the years is how one of the issues with fluid milk, one of the headwinds is that its best friend cereal had kind of gotten to trouble. Is that something that you guys see as well?
Definitely. I mean, the loss of cereal, and I say more broadly, breakfast at home has been a challenge. I mean, one of milk's great virtues is that it's more of an at-home product than an out-of-home product. And I think one of the reasons you've seen continued demand even after panic buying is there's just more people at home. But what I've learned in my short year in this business, and you guys are way ahead of me, is there's always never one silver bullet in milk and in dairy. It's always one of 12 or 15 things. They're all important. Cereal is important. Competitive products are important. Pricing is important. Retail availability is important. And if there was just one silver bullet, boy, I would tackle that head on.
In your first year with MilkPEP, what are your observations on the farming side of the business?
No, amazing. It's a complex industry, as we've referred to, but the most impressive thing that I've seen is just the people involved. And I think it's always a difficult industry to operate in. And this year, everyone's resilience and determination to make sure Americans got the milk when they needed it, even in the toughest of times at the points of the lack of supply, it's really been touching and makes me very proud to be able to represent the milk companies of America. We should be grateful.
Thanks, Ian, for your time today. If you want to check out the new ads, go to gotmilk.com.
That's the industry angle. Now let's talk to two guests who track milk and dairy going into food banks and public schools.
Let's welcome Michael Flood, president and CEO of the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank, one of the largest food aid networks in the country. Michael has held this position for more than 20 years and says his agency is seeing unprecedented levels of demand. Michael, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So we've all read a lot about food banks being busy these days. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been seeing in Los Angeles?
Well, record demand for food assistance, with the pandemic hitting, it closed down large portions of the economy and led to a lot of layoffs. Here in LA County, our unemployment rate spiked up to 21% in May. So we felt it right from the very beginning, and which led to the need for us to acquire a lot more food. Now that we're 6 months out from the onset of the pandemic, our distribution is up by more than 125%. So in other words, more than doubled the food both coming in and going out. We reached more than 20 million meals in July. August was a little bit lower than that.
More specific to dairy, how have your receipts of product changed?
They're up significantly. However, it's this Farmers to Families food box program, which is where we've seen the huge increase in dairy, in fresh produce, and also in meat items. So those were the three items that the USDA focused on when they started this program in May. I would say our dairy product has gone up by more than tenfold of pre-pandemic as far as the amount of product coming in. And the other thing that this program, interestingly, has attempted to deal with is what we call sort of last mile and getting that product to, again, the food bank. LA Regional Food Bank provides food to 600 other charitable organizations throughout LA County. And we also directly distribute food to seniors, to kids, and to families through what we call our own direct distribution. So we've been able to work with a number of the Farmers to Families food box vendors or contractors to be able to do those kind of just-in-time deliveries that actually has worked very well.
Michael, is there anything in particular about the composition of those food boxes that is appealing to the people picking them up or helpful for the people that are distributing them? It's a novel concept, as you said. Why have they been popular?
For this round three, Phil, what's occurred is USDA's moved to combination boxes. And we actually just got our first load on Saturday and took a look at it. So it has a gallon of milk. It has some other dairy product, look like sour cream and some cheese. It had fresh produce, some hearty fresh produce, and then it had chicken in it. So in essence, taking those three kits from the first two rounds and actually putting them together as one combination box. So we think that will be also very popular and, you know, it does present a little bit of challenge on the handling side, but again, I think our team will be able to kind of figure that part of it out.
So have you found the Farmers to Family Food Box program to be more helpful than your traditional food aid type programs or the traditional buys that USDA does annually?
No, I wouldn't say that it's been more helpful because the TFAP, the program I mentioned earlier, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and we also run Commodity Supplemental Food Program. And we also do, summer food service, summer lunch, after school meal. All these programs are very important and provide really needed help. I think where this Farmers to Families Food Box program has been helpful is it's dealt with two issues. One, again, a lot of food getting thrown away, a lot of milk being dumped, a lot of dairy, another product, unfortunately, having no home and having to be dumped. And dealing with also this spike in the demand for food assistance, which is just here in Los Angeles County and I think throughout the U.S. is really just through the roof.
You ran into a challenge recently with cheese and the Commodity Supplemental Foods Program that we read about that provides food to seniors, if I understand correctly. How are you solving that and what help do you need there?
Basically, the Commodity Supplemental Food Program provides a stable food box of non-perishable items, includes cheese for older adults on a monthly basis. Amazon has been a great in-kind partner in that regard, donating delivery to seniors. But the vehicles they're using for that particular program are not refrigerated. So that's the challenge. We've been asking USDA for, in essence, a waiver to get cheese to the seniors.
I'm just kind of curious, what's your expectation for the rest of this year and into next year?
Well, I think, you know, unfortunately, demand's going to stay high. What is a good indicator of overall demand for us is what the unemployment rate looks like. It has crept down here in LA County to, I think it's 16.6%, so which is about double the national average. So that tends to be a good indication of, you know, what demand. Not everyone seeking food assistance is out of work, but it just tends to be a good indicator. We found, you know, at the height of the Great Recession, unemployment here was 12%. So we're far higher than where we were at the height of the Great Recession. So, you know, the big question is how long does it take for the economy to recover and improve? And, you know, right now, I think our view is it's going to take a while.
Fascinating stuff. Is there anything else you'd like us to ask you? Is there something that we're missing that you'd like to talk about today?
Well, I just appreciate the attention on this issue. Need that food support. We need volunteer support. We're nonprofit organizations. We need financial support. So people can go to feedingamerica.org to find the food bank in their local community to link with them to provide whatever assistance they're able to.
Okay. Well, Michael, thank you very much for joining us today.
Sounds good. Thanks so much. Have a good day, everybody.
School is another important channel for milk. We estimate roughly 7-8% of all fluid milk in the country is distributed via public schools. And with schools operating with a patchwork of in-person, virtual, and hybrid, our next guest, Patty Montague, president and CEO of the School Nutrition Association, says schools have seen a huge decline in meal participation, which affects their operating budgets. Patty, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
From your perspective, or from your members' perspective, why is milk and our dairy products important to school nutrition?
Well, milk has always been an important part of school meals. It provides students with a key source of calcium and so many important nutrients. And a lot of people don't realize that milk, those 9 important nutrients, you don't get from other milk.
Help us understand. So the people that are serving the schools today, they've seen their revenue drop considerably. And so I'm guessing there's a lot of concern or fear that the road back from that is either long or impossible.
Financial loss is the top concern of our members right now. A recent survey of our members showed participation rates go down 50%. And of those, it's still continuing. We're seeing most are getting at 50% at the most, but most are in the 30% range.
Because the financial picture has changed so materially for the worse, are you saying that it's going to be very difficult for these school systems to recover?
Short-term and long-term. Short-term, if a school nutrition program loses money, the money has to come out of the general fund of a school district. So what that means for a school district, then there's money maybe for teachers or for computers or other tools and resources that are needed to teach the kids in the schools. Long-term, though, you're talking about renovations needed, equipment, and even the hiring of staff.
How do you think that impacts milk consumption in schools?
Well, you know, as you know, milk has to be served with all meals. It's an important part of the child's diet and the nutrients it gets. And unfortunately, when participation is down overall, so will milk sales.
You know, figuring out how to get, you know, meals to kids that aren't going to the building or are going to the building 2 days a week or something like that is a tall task. And what creative efforts are people undertaking to try to increase access and increase those delivery percentages?
Obviously, they're doing grab and go since last March, but they're even packing up. So if a kid comes in like 2 days a week, they'll package up, you know, 5 breakfasts, 5 lunches and send them home with that for the remainder of the week. They're also delivering to locations in certain neighborhoods on buses and vans, and even some are even going house to house to deliver the meals. I think it's working. Last week, we were on a Zoom call with some members, and I had a member in Illinois who had maybe 100 kids a day. And then once he started establishing pickup points in certain neighborhoods corresponding with bus routes and bus stops, he saw an increase up to over 1,500 meals a day, which is great. Overwhelmed schools, they can't be expected to enroll millions of newly eligible students in the free and reduced program during emergency. And furthermore, the logistics of checking eligibility and collecting payments puts the staff, the school nutrition staff, as well as students at risk for that COVID transmission. So I think with the waivers that were passed in the House bill, hopefully were passed in the Senate bill, that will provide this access all throughout the year. And we're very happy that that's for our members and for the programs. And we hope the participation will increase.
Oh, so in the new the continuing resolution, there was an increase in that waiver, a continuation of that waiver.
That's correct. Yes.
Well, Patty, we really appreciate your time today.
You know, I appreciate coming on and sharing the great work that school nutrition professionals are doing. Our members care about the health and well-being of our nation's children. That's why they do the great work they do every day.
That's a wrap for today's show. As always, we want to thank our production team, Matt Herrick, Michael Gooden, and Andrew Jerome at IDFA, and Corey Romero over here at Blumlingen Associates.
Again, a huge thanks to our sponsors, Standpack. Contact Standpack to experience their legendary service. Thanks for listening to the Dairy Download. Until next time, stay sharp.